Welcome to Ira's Everything Bagel, where I talk with intriguing people about everything, their passions, pursuits, and points of view. Forgiveness is something we often extend to others, but how often do we offer it to ourselves? My guest today, Lena Fain, knows firsthand how difficult that can be. In her powerful memoir, Shattering the Mirror, One Woman's Journey of Healing, she shares her remarkable story of overcoming childhood emotional neglect, confronting painful truths, and ultimately finding self-acceptance and healing. We'll discuss forgiveness, resilience, and what it takes to reclaim your life and live authentically. The book is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about Lena, go to shatteringthemirror.com. Shatteringthemirror.com. Follow her on Facebook and Instagram. And Lena, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. Looking forward to it.
I want to quote from your prologue in your book, and just a little of it. And this is a quote: "When I learned that my mother had been diagnosed with stage 4 lung cancer, I was paralyzed with fear. It wasn't a dread of losing her. No, far from it. I was afraid of feeling nothing when she died," end quote. That's a pretty powerful statement and leads into a whole discussion of how you, I'll use my term rather than yours, but you've isolated yourself at that point emotionally in order to function growing up, as I think a lot of us do. And what you did is you ended up compensating through a lot of overachievement. Why did you decide to write the book after you came to this realization about your mother and why you had isolated yourself?
I was 51 years old, which is a mature woman. And I didn't realize it at the time, but my mother was so abusive that I ended up shutting down part of my heart, my deep part. And, you know, I became an overachiever, A's in school, graduate degree, really good job, doing well at work. And I was loving, but I bypassed a lot of things that were from the heart out of fear that I would be shamed. And when my mother, she was diagnosed with lung cancer, and she died within a week and a half of that diagnosis. So it wasn't very long.
Quick. Yeah.
And I actually, you know, I remember the last meal I had with her is we had bagels. She served a whole bagels and cream cheese for breakfast with my dad. And then she started chemo. And in the middle of the chemo treatment, and she couldn't tolerate it, they stopped. And within a couple of days after that, she collapsed. And she was actually on her deathbed, intubated in the hospital. So all the vitriol from my mother came from her mouth, abusive words. But she couldn't talk. But I looked into her eyes, and it was as if, like, for the first time I saw eyes that had some glow to them. They looked brown, not like this pitch black is how I used to see them. And when that happened, something hit my heart, like as if for the first time of, that's my mother. I see kindness in her eyes. I see her with her eyes making an amends. She couldn't talk. That cracked open something that had been shut for a really long time. And she died a couple of days later. And it was another 10-year journey of, oh, here's my heart. Oh, I like painting. I like watching sunsets. All these things that I had not, I was doing math equations, you know, like, it was profound. And I would say that journey to uncover my heart involved uncovering my true words, seeing like I was seeing, I was looking into people's eyes that my life, even though my mind isn't as strong as it used to be, I do forget my words. You know, I don't think I could do the same job I could have 10 years or 20 years mm-hmm. ago. But I am so glad I didn't miss the opening of my heart, which made me grounded, made all my relationships everywhere better, not just with people I knew, but with strangers, walking in the world in this way that was available, was more important than my really good job.
When you came to that realization, and you were just talking about it right now, did your father play a role in helping you cope with your mother's verbal challenges, let's put it that way, or was he ignorant of what was going on in terms of the dynamic?
Yeah, my father was an amazing father in some ways. Like, my mother was a stay-at-home mom and he was traveling most of the time. So when he came home on weekends, he was the one that it was, you know, I have three sisters, so there was four girls, took us to the zoo when we were little to see the grandparents, to take us to amusement parks, miniature golfing, read us stories at night. That's what I remember of my father. However, when my father was the traveling salesman, that's when my mother would unleash abuse on her daughters. And when I was a teenager, it was just awful. And she would just keep going until I eventually would say, F you. And as soon as I let out that F bomb, then when my father would walk in the door, she goes, your daughter swore at me. And he would say, I don't care what your mother does. You cannot swear, you're grounded for 2 weeks. So he wasn't home for the abuse. She did it behind closed doors with each one of my sisters. I didn't witness my sister's abuse. It was always one-on-one, kind of like Nurse Ratched and One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest. Like, she waited till the doctors went away and she'd abuse the patients when she was alone with them. I felt the same way, hopeless, angry. And this behavior of my mother's really persisted until she was on her deathbed. And I believe she was 76.
But here's the question. You had, I understand the role of your father. You also had the other siblings, though. Did you ever compare notes and lean on each other for support?
That is such a good question. No. It wasn't safe to compare notes. I thought I was the bad one, the only one that got in trouble. It wasn't until our mother died that I had one sister that in high school, like, she ran away and we didn't see, maybe saw her twice in 40 years. So I didn't know what was going on with that one sister. I didn't see my sisters getting abused. So I thought, oh, it's me. There's something wrong with me. I'm shameful. When our mother died, it was almost like we started having real conversations with each other. And that was also a lot of the growth, realizing it wasn't just me, that my sisters got it too.
Yeah, that's quite a connection to have to make at that point, as opposed to earlier on. So you felt, growing up, in a way, isolated.
Very isolated. And I adored my father. I mean, my dad did the best he could with the tools that he had, but it wasn't until after our mom died, my dad would come over to my house for dinner every night. And I really got to have real conversations with my dad and said, Dad, mom was abusive. You weren't home, but this is what she did. And he's like, I didn't know it was that bad.
The book is out now, and called The Shattering the Mirror. Did your sisters read it?
Yes, they did.
And what was their reaction to it?
Wow, you're brave. One of my sisters who lives in New Zealand, she wrote a memoir as well. They said, wow, you're brave. And, well, when you mention that story about me, and I don't mention my sisters very much, I kept their stories more private. They said, well, you got that little detail wrong, but, you know, you were right. So they were... it was interesting and very, very supportive.
And did your father read the book?
My father died 10 years after my mom. Right. And so actually what freed me to write the book was, you know, my father dying too. And I think that process of awakening, it was a 10-year, it was hard. I never thought I would publish. I loved to write as a little kid, and I just remember writing in my diary, I was in first or second grade, all about the time, the love of my life, the second grader who had the coolest corduroy pants. And I wrote about it in my diary. And, you know, I hid it under my bed. And the next day when I came home, my mother was standing at the door with my diary and read it out loud. And I was so ashamed. And then I thought for sure when my dad would come home, she'd tell my mother, no, it's not okay to read someone's private words. And my mother brought out the diary again in front of my sisters, and my father read the chapter about the love of my life in second grade. And that really shut me down. Oh, I'm not going to write. I'll write an engineering report, but I'm not going to ever tell anybody anything personal. So that's, you know, to free my diary at last, or my words, my stories, and put it on the page. I was terrified I'd be shamed. And you know, I wasn't shamed.
It just seems a hard balance for you at that moment when she was dying to come to a realization that someone who had, in your mind, abused you in a lot of different ways verbally, at the same time was a human being and clearly had a relationship with your father, so they got along, and other relationships. It's hard to separate that out, not to balance it so much as separate it out, because how do you deal with someone who interacts with other people, but with, for you specifically, there was this abuse and this verbal abuse over many, many years.
It was verbal and physical. I mean, pulling hair, you know, throwing glasses of milk, just the whole thing. And as soon as if the doorbell would ring, she'd open the door and go, hi. You know, it was just duplicitous. Yeah. It was hard.
Manipulation.
We didn't talk about it. I didn't start going to counseling until I was, you know, married and in my 30s and, you know, had postpartum depression. And really it required a lot of different somatic so I can get my body back. I'm glad I did the journey of healing, but it involved, you know, somatics, using my voice, writing a lot, and forgiveness. And now I could honestly say, I try and be in the moment and be a blessing to the moment, not a curse. Mm-hmm. And I have forgiveness. I mean, my mother, she must have had some kind of trauma. I mean, my dad and my mom were Jewish. Their parents were all immigrants coming one at a time, you know, baking Jewish cookies to earn money to send the next person over on the ship from Russia. And I'm sure my mom was an only child. Her parents both worked during the Depression. So she had some kind of trauma going on that was unresolved. And this anger was taken out on her children. It was sad, but I'm now 68. I have a lot of forgiveness for my mother and keeping all that anger inside. And she must have been in a lot of pain.
Yeah, usually people are when they act that way. We should point out that June 26th is Forgiveness Day, which is also known as Lena Fine Day.
Yeah.
I just named it that, so that way
we can
celebrate
you.
Both. Yes, no problem.
Forgiveness is everything. I feel walking in the world with my heart. I may not remember sometimes what I ate for breakfast. My brain's not as sharp as it was, but I know my heart's in the right place. And so most of the time I really feel like I'm blessing the moment by looking in someone's eyes, thanking them for coffee, thanking them for a bagel, whatever it is.
Well, here's what I'd like to ask you as a challenge, though. How do you forgive, and I don't mean it in your mother's case, but in general, because you've gone through this, as you call it, this journey, how do you forgive someone today who treats you badly, but treats you badly not because they were abused as a kid, but generally, I'll use an old term, the bad seed, someone who's just bad. Someone who's just manipulative is part of their life. How do you forgive someone like that? Because you know they're going to do it again. And don't you open yourself up to manipulation or worse by giving them?
Yes, that's such a good question. I live in San Francisco. I take walks every day. In general, I'm not there's homeless people on the streets. You know, I recognize them. Yeah, sometimes yelling, you know, and I tend to, when I'm walking by, in a sense, protect myself. You know, I had once a, you know, guy on the street, like, lunge and actually bite my hand like a dog.
Wow.
So I have a protection around. I think I have a good radar. So I have a protection. But in general, when I walk in to, in San Francisco, a coffee shop or a food shop, I always try, even if that worker is looks stressed, I always try and just kind of breathe and say, oh my gosh, you look really busy today. And something to just sort of break the moment so that they're getting some, a blessing from me in a sense, even though they may be really, really stressed out. And in general, I'm having many more moments of blessings than curses. And if I feel I see one of a person that's doing bad behavior, I tend to just walk around it.
No, that I understand. I do something similar when I encounter people that are not having the best day. I try and lighten their load a little bit.
Yeah.
But I'm referring more to relationships, someone you have to deal with on an ongoing basis, who can be abusive or could be manipulative, who's just a bad seed, as I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, I tend to.
Yeah, how do you handle that in that case?
I tend to tread lightly and limit my, especially let's say it's a family member or a sister.
That's always the tough one. The family is always,
you know, the family, to be kind, but maybe sometimes I have to limit some of the interactions, but with kindness.
Okay. So wait a minute. I'm going to challenge you, Lena, because it's important. Yeah. Again, author of the book, Shattering the Mirror, One Woman's Journey of Healing, is available on Amazon, Barnes and Noble, and all the usual places. If you're dealing with someone who, whether it's a family member, a friend, whatever, they're just, you just know they're toxic. I'm going to use that overused term, but I'll use it in this case. They're toxic. You can limit your interaction with them to protect yourself, and you can try to be kind, but don't they take advantage of that even if you're trying to limit it? In other words, if you're an annoying person, you're going to annoy somebody else regardless of whether they have barriers up, kindness up, whatever they have. So I guess what I'm trying to find out is, in your discovery of how to cope in today's world and in giving forgiveness, is there part of it, a practical side? In other words,
yes.
You mentioned it earlier, you're protecting yourself, but you can't just protect yourself with kindness. If you're in a certain situation, it sometimes
takes a confrontation. Boundaries.
Yeah, boundaries, but it takes a certain communication of those boundaries to someone. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
As I grew older, my mom was horrifically abusive. And she started even being abusive to especially my daughter. She had something about girls. She'd like in front, this is when my kids were, one of them was 2 and one of them was 4. And I remember she looked at my daughter and said, "You're a spoiled brat." And then she looked at my son and said, "And you're such, so nice. When I die, you're going to get all of my things." She says that. And what I had to do is limit the time I spent with my mother and limit those. I never left my kids, especially my daughter, alone with my mother. She didn't change. She still had this thing of horrifically, especially verbally abusive language. Now,
I guess what I'm getting at though, Lena, is that when she did that, at that moment, those are your kids she's attacking verbally.
And I say, I'm leaving.
Step in and say, stop.
I say, stop. And if she kept going, I'd take the kids and go home. I had to limit the interaction. Right. I just refused. And I would not let my kids stay overnight there.
Right.
No.
Would the light bulb go on in her head when you intervened that way?
No, she was always super. God, you're asking good questions.
That's what I'm here for.
She was always relentless.
Yeah.
Like this dog with a bone that she would not let go. And I would end up we would be at a restaurant. I'd pick up my kids and walk out of the restaurant if she started doing that. And so I had power in that way.
Yeah. But she never learned from what you did behaviorally to maybe modify her behavior. She was always going to keep
She just kept going. It really, really sad. I don't know if there was a mental illness there,
right.
Whether it's bipolar, I don't know, but it was relentless abuse. Usually if you were the one in the room with her or my daughter, and oh my gosh, you know, she's not in my life anymore. Right. You know, I have great kids who now I have grandkids that are 2 and 4, and they're like, they're in the Pacific Northwest. I'm in San Francisco and I fly and see them every couple of months. And they're like, more Nana, you know, more Nana. I don't have that. I just don't criticize. I might make a suggestion, but my mom was just relentless in how cruel she was, especially to girls.
How long did it take you to write the book once you realized that you wanted to write the memoir? What was it? I guess the first part of the question would be, what made you decide to write the memoir? And then two is how long it took. One is more procedural.
Part of this awakening, and I was working in high tech, was I started, as I was opening my heart, really like hearing music for the first time, dancing for the first time. So I started having events in my home that represented the arts, mostly women, and I'd have musicians come in. It was wonderful. And somebody recommended this author that did writing circles. Well, she did a writing circle in my home, and you did a free write about anything. And her rules were, if you wish to read your passage, you can. And the listeners are not allowed to do any shaming. That they can say, wow, when you wrote that, this is how it made me feel. And that was like the opposite of what my mom did regarding my diary. That started the journey. I didn't think I was going to write a book, of starting to write, take some writing courses and be more brave, like read out loud a chapter in class. I got braver and braver, basically. And I still was terrified to publish, but I did. But in general, the shaming that came from my mother just hasn't happened.
Right.
From the readers.
I talked to you earlier about talking or sharing the book with your sisters and their reaction. What about your kids? They're adults now, right?
My daughter, she heard some of my early chapters and she was the one, Mom, that's amazing. Keep going. And
oh,
she
okay.
read the whole book and she's amazing. My son, who's in his 30s, like, nope, not going there. I don't blame him, you know, like we're having some vagina monologues in my book.
Right.
And so I get it. It's not the average reader really is. It's actually the highest category is 60s and, you know, and up women readers. Because I think we had a particular type of trauma where our parents didn't have the schools. This is in the day where teachers, if you mispronounce a word, could pull your hair. You know, it was... abuse still exists, but it was in that day, no one talked about it when I was growing up.
So right.
It's a little bit different.
It was just, and there was no social media.
And you know, there was no one to talk to. And
you know. Oh, no, exactly. How long did it take you to write the book?
I would say it took me a good 10 years from when I started, but it was stop, start. You know, this is just, you know, and then I just did it and didn't know what was going to happen. And I, you know, my first podcast, I was terrified and now I'm relaxed and it feels good. I'm glad I did it.
No, rightly so. Anytime anybody can finish a book, in my opinion, that's huge. Congratulations, because it's a lot of work. It's not just simply writing an article. It's a lot more involved in that, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, it doesn't matter. When you finished the book and you read it again for the probably 100th time, because you clearly have to redrafts and draft number 10 is different from draft number 1. When you had the finished product and you read it just to make sure everything was still good, did anything pop into your head that made you realize, oh, I didn't think about that, even though I wrote about it, but it didn't make an impact until I've just read it now in the book?
I think what happened to me, the more I read the book, the more I got right, like integrated the story and the trauma in such a way that it was healing. So now when I read it, I'm like, oh, it's not like I'm disassociating from it, but that I've absorbed it. But my way of walking in the world is different because I'm really relaxed. I'm not like, oh, I have to cover that up. I have to have a smile. Hi, how are you doing today? When I feel grumpy, I feel like I'm just being authentic, not afraid that someone's going to, you know, pull my hair, bite my, I'm brave. I'm courageous enough to be who I truly am. And that for me is priceless. It's everything, really.
Do you find that it has helped you, now that the book is out, helped you with current relationships?
Yes. Yes. Like every single one of my relationships, including with my kids, friends I've had girlfriends since like first grade. Every single one of those relationships, it wasn't bad, got better because I'm more here. I'm more available. I'm more relaxed. I'm not as hypervigilant. I'm not running around doing all these tasks. I'm retired. And I'm like, oh, my days feel so full. Just walking out in San Francisco and smiling at somebody. I know so many people that I walk by in my neighborhood. My sister lives down the street. In the past, I would have been really, really busy doing some task. And now I'm kind of let go of all that. I'll still do some things, but it's more relational. Mm-hmm. And I'm so glad, like, it's never too late at 68 that I didn't miss the memo that I had this time to be real, to be real and not hold back my voice. So I feel like I'm showing more of myself in a way that feels good. It's not like fake nice. It's just here I am. And it feels really good.
Before I let you go, what do you want people to take away from reading your book? I know we've talked a lot about it, the book itself, but is there one thing you'd like people to take away from the book?
That regardless of the trauma or the abuse, to be brave, to face it, and to be whole, to be real, to be kind, to really be in the moment and do your best to be a blessing, a mitzvah to the moment, as best as you can. It's not saying that you sanitize everything, but have an everything bagel, like get some seeds in your teeth, you know, like I just feel the joy for those simple things of being alive, being kind, especially in this kind of crazy time we live in of AI and politics, is to walk in the world as a blessing, even if things are falling apart. I think that's what it's all about. And I'm glad I didn't miss the memo. I mean, I could have been passable, but I'm glad I'm definitely in the moment with my full heart.
Well, that's a great way to leave it. My guest has been Lena Fine. She's author of Shattering the Mirror, One Woman's Journey of Healing. It's available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, and all the usual places. And for everything about Lena, you can go to shatteringthemirror.com, shatteringthemirror.com. Follow her on Facebook and Instagram. And Lena, thanks for being on the show.
Thank you so much.
And join us every Thursday for a new schmear on Ira's Everything Bagel.